kidding.
Of Beverly Hills.
No, you're not kidding.
Steakhouse, come on down.
And this segment is still entering show brought to you by Ted's of Beverly Hills. Right now, we've got that great porterhouse steak for two, only $63.95. You get a Ted on the house. Pick a potato for the vegetative tree.
We want to put our meat in your...
Cameron Diaz, so the topless photos you're saying, Ted Bell joins us from Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Yeah, there were some topless photos, apparently, that Cam, and I call her that because I've been introduced to her a couple of times. She allegedly did some topless photos.
Yeah, and she's trying to get the rights to those. The guy that took them is allegedly trying to have them published and wanted some money.
Well, they're saying it's extortion. I think she's probably going overboard a little bit. Just the point I was trying to make with you, Phil, is this. There's been an awful lot made lately of these topless photos of celebrities. Topless photos of celebrities and topless photos of celebrities. And I don't believe you should violate someone's privacy. I also think there has to be a reality faced. Cameron Diaz is a beautiful woman. Please don't misunderstand me. But Cameron is a woman who, like many, was not blessed. And this is why it's very interestingly enough, pursuant to the topic you were talking about in this last, when I turned the radio on here a few minutes ago, the lady from the Homeowners Association. Some women are not blessed with a large chest. Now, that's one area, but in point of fact, there are some women where it really doesn't, in my opinion, it's no longer obscene or it's no longer an invasion of privacy to show a picture of them topless, because at some point you have to draw a line between the woman showing something and basically you might as well be looking at a man. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words,
what are you saying about Cameron Diaz, that she doesn't have a chest?
Well, I don't think it qualifies insofar as any photograph of her topless is indecent. And I think that the courts are beginning to recognize this.
Well, cite a case.
I don't know of any cases, but I do know that there are a lot of photographers who have topless photographs of individual women and say, well, I'm going to sell these photographs. He's saying, well, that is an invasion of her privacy because she's topless. And the photographer will say, yes, she's topless, but then Arnold Schwarzenegger has been photographed topless. Phil Hendry has been photographed topless. A lot of men have been photographed topless, a lot of women. At what point is there no difference in a woman being topless and a man being topless? And I say, and I think there are a lot of lawyers that would argue, when the woman is so underendowed that it doesn't matter anymore. You see, and
so that's what you're saying about Cameron Diaz.
I'm saying, let me ask you this. Do you, what, my daughter, when she was 4 years old, we would take her to the beach. Okay?
All right.
And she was so small, just a little tiny girl, we would put her in her diaper and she'd walk around. Okay, technically she's a female and technically she's topless. Would you call it obscene?
A 4 year old?
Yes.
Of course not. She's a baby. She's not developed at all. She's just a baby.
Well, that's the point that I'm trying to make. At what point do you say, Ms. Diaz, with all due respect, you know, what's the difference between photographing you topless and a young man? All right. And
so what you're doing here in one fell swoop is you're insulting Cameron Diaz.
No, I'm not insulting Cameron Diaz. What I'm saying,
and any woman who may not, quote, qualify to have breasts.
Well, but the point that I'm trying to make is Cameron Diaz is a beautiful woman. She's a respected actress. She has no shortage of male admirers. And I don't think there's anything wrong with her life. I think she can let this one go. I think she's going to get absolutely taken apart in a court of law. I think they are going to take her apart limb from limb in a court of law. Because
what are they going to do? This look at.
I'll tell you what they're going to do. The photographer's going to hire an attorney who's going to argue, Your Honor, this is a case that Ms. Diaz argues violates her privacy, her right to privacy, to wit, the exposure of her breasts. And with point, you know, he's going to do it a lot better than I could do it, but basically to say, what breasts, you know? And so what we're saying here And I think what the attorney for the photographer is going to say is there is no invasion of privacy because there's you can't see nothing, you know. And Ms. Diaz is arguing because I think she's a star and she believes that she's. And a lot of women are like this. I think a lot of women have been brainwashed into believing that any time they are topless, it's an exposure of something very private. It's private if you have breasts. I don't know how else
to... Look it, man. Is there a woman alive that doesn't have breasts?
No, there's not a man alive, if you want to get right down to it. But the point is, at what point does the mammary gland qualify as a bona fide, that is a breast? And at what point, when you're talking about a Cameron Diaz or some women, where you're, well, you know, we're quibbling here, you know. I mean, you might as well be, as I said, you might as well be looking at a, you know, shirts and skins basketball game, like I said to my son the other day, you know. But really, Bill.
Oh, come on, man. I mean, Cameron Diaz, these photographs, look, at somebody thought it was worth taking pictures of her topless.
Yeah, some guy did think it was worth taking pictures of her topless. And there's a lot of guys, I'm sure, that would want to see her topless. But when you take a look at her topless, you're going to go, yeah, that's great, thanks a lot. You know, thank you very much for my $350 or whatever it cost me to, you know, spend on the penthouse or Playboy or Maxim or FHM or whatever I bought. Yeah, thank you very much. She's Cameron Diaz. She's a big star. I got a shot to, you know, look at her topless, and it's, you know, it's a guy. It's not a guy, and I don't mean to say...
See, the more you talk, the more insulting this is to her. You say you know her?
No, I'm not trying to insult her. I'm trying to say there is a legal point that has to be observed here. And I think if Cameron Diaz presses the point, a real good attorney is going to... You talk about walking out of there topless, she won't have any clothes on at all, man. She'll be walking out with a barrel and two straps over her shoulders. They get rid of her because this guy's... She's suing him, all right? And he's going to get all the court costs out of her and everything. That's what I feel. So I guess that really the point is that there are many women in Cameron Diaz's position who... Imagine that they have breasts. And
okay, look. No woman imagines that she has breasts. She's got breasts. Unless, of course, there are some women who've, you know, a fortunate, though they may be, have had some surgery as to cancer, for instance. But we're talking about a healthy woman who has breasts. Now, she may not have the biggest breasts in the world, right?
What are you talking about? Either she's got breasts or she doesn't. I'm telling you right now, Cameron Diaz doesn't have any. Now, you can cut it any way you want, Phil.
What do you mean she doesn't have any?
She doesn't have any. How can you call that indecent exposure or exposure private when it's you know, there's nothing there? I'm going to bring up the example again. My four-year-old daughter...
Your four-year-old daughter is a four-year-old little girl in a diaper, okay?
Uh-huh. So... I'm supposed to put a two-piece bathing suit on her?
No, it's a baby. Frankly, you know, I've seen little girls up to the age of 5 and 6 running around without a top on. Big wow. Once a little girl gets to be a little older, just for her own sense of, I don't know, her own sense of clothing, what is appropriate, what isn't, you might want to start dressing her in a one-piece or a two-piece. I don't know. But a little four...
Well, wait a minute. So the four-year-old doesn't have a top on, why? Because she's a baby or because she doesn't have breasts?
I'm not going to get into this discussion with you. The baby is a baby.
All right. But I think we both know what we're talking about.
Yeah, we both know what we're talking about. And you're saying Cameron Diaz is built like a four-year-old baby.
Yes.
Oh, get out of here.
Okay, all right, great, fine. Then when these pictures are finally made public, as I'm sure they will be because, you know, I don't think she can stop it, there's going to be a whole lot of guys that are going to want their money back. On that subscription to whatever. High society.
Yeah, it'll make high society, I'm sure. All right, Ted Bell joining us here on the Phil Henry Show. Our number is 1-800. What are we playing the commercial for?
The end of the segment.
Ted of Beverly Hills Steakhouse.
Oh, man.
Come on down.
Now, listen, whether you're topless or whether you're fully clothed, I don't care. Come on down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. I tell you what. Any woman that comes in topless gets a free baked potato from the baked potato tree. Courtesy of Ted's Beverly Hills, free Ted.
You're kidding, right?
Of course I'm kidding. Well, if you're topless but you don't have anything to cover up, yeah, come on in. I'll give you a free baked potato.
So, in other words, all flat-chested women.
All flat-chested women who are topless get a baked potato, yes. It went right hot off the tree, if you'll pardon the expression. At Teddy Beverly Hills. Bedford, Beverly Hills.
All right, Ted. 1-800-449-8686, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. A look at Americana in the summertime. And, Jeff, what have you been looking at?
Phil, I've been looking at a place called In-N-Out Burger. Now, many people don't know of In-N-Out Burger on account of it's only on the West Coast. So if you come out to California or Nevada or Arizona, you'll find a place called In-N-Out Burger. I'm originally from California, and I've been going to In-N-Out Burger I'm 25, so I've been going there at least since I was, now I'm kind of nervous.
You've been going there your whole life, just say that.
I've been going there my folks took me there, yeah, but it's a great place. And the reason why In-N-Out Burger is good, it started in 1948, and this man by the name of Harry and Esther Snyder, that was the guy's name. They started it in 1948.
The guy's name was Harry Snyder, and his wife is Esther.
Well, yeah. They started it in 1940. What did I say?
You said the guy's name was Harry and Esther Snyder. So that's the...
Oh, yeah, all right. That's a total biff. Anyway, Harry's idea of a drive-through hamburger... See, this is the first drive-through hamburger stand, okay? Now, one of the things that I wanted to say about In-N-Out Burger that makes it so interesting to me, not only... is the burgers are really good. Anybody's, do you ever eat there, Mr. Henry? Huh, Mr. Henry? Do you ever eat?
Yes, I eat there, man. I like it.
Do you know any of the secret codes of the burgers and stuff?
Yeah, you know, like 4x4, animal style, that crap.
Yeah, so you can ask for burgers that aren't even on the menu if you know what to say about them and everything. Like, I'll go in and I'll ask for, a triple, I'll just go and say, give me, 8 patties with no bun. And they're like, yeah, okay. They wink at me, and they give it to me.
What is that? Just 8 patties with no bun?
No, that's a cheese sandwich. So anyway...
What are you talking about, a cheese sandwich?
That's 8 patties with no bun.
A cheese sandwich?
Yeah. So, but here's the thing, and a lot of people don't know this about In-N-Out Burger. In-N-Out Burger is family-owned, okay? The Snyder family has owned it since 1948. The father owned it, and then two of the sons owned it, and tragically, both of the sons, I think, died, or maybe one of them died, and the other one didn't die. But I don't know. I think both of them died. But maybe one did, and the other didn't.
Thank you for being clear.
Well, I'm sorry.
I could get this information by just going to their website.
Oh, well, okay. But I mean...
Well, who died and who didn't?
One of them died, and one of them may have died.
That's great. Okay. Who runs the company?
Esther still runs the company, Esther Snyder. She runs the company still out of Baldwin Park, California. It doesn't have no franchises, which makes it different from McDonald's and those. It has like 93 different locations at the time of his death. So
whose death?
Oh, I was just reading from the website.
Yeah, well, look at man, I could do that. Who... All right, while Rich was president, In-N-Out grew from 18 to 93 at the time of his... Okay, so Rich, the poor guy, died.
Yeah, Rich died, and then, I think Guy died, too.
That's great, man. So who's left?
The mother is Esther, and she is always driving around to the different burger stands. She owns all the burger stands. Now, here's something that's very interesting, Mr. Henry. Many of the In-N-Out employees have been with In-N-Out Burger since 1948. And it's kind of interesting that they have really good benefits. They start their employees off at $9 an hour. It's a family-owned business. If they make a certain quota of burgers sold every year, then the company takes all employees out to some big vacation or everything else, So it's really, really interesting.
Can I ask a question?
What?
I want to ask a question.
Yeah, is that Bud?
Yeah, Jeff, you say that they have really good benefits, and the family owns the company and everything, and they've been there for 20 years, huh?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because when I go in, I notice they don't have any Mexicans working there. You think that's the reason?
Will
you shut up? What do you mean?
I don't know. It may be a good point.
No, I swear to God. You go to In-N-Out Burger, they're all white men. It's one of the reasons why I like it there.
Okay, that's real great, man. You're really selling the burgers now, aren't you?
Well, I don't want to comment on that, Mr. Henry. On account of...
You don't have to comment on everything. What is your point, man? It's a great place.
I'm telling you right now, you go to In-N-Out Burger, you don't see no Mexicans.
Working there? Are you saying working there?
Yeah.
Bull crap, man. I went in and out the other day. There was a kid there that was a Hispanic kid.
Born in America or Mexico?
You know what, man? I didn't freaking take a census.
I think Bud probably has a very good point. You don't see no immigrants working there, you know?
You don't see any sweat dripping off their faces onto the burgers. You don't see any...
Oh, man, that's great. If I ever hope to get any McDonald's sponsorship, it's over.
Yeah, like you had a shot on that. That's big-time national money.
Hey, Phil, we want to get McDonald's money for you. I ought to get in that burger. They got white people. Well, I don't mean they have white...
Well, both of you guys, get out of here.
How come you cut me off?
Every freaking time I want to talk about something, you got to bring up the race angle.
I'm telling you right now, there's no Mexicans.
That happens to be a bunch of crap, because the very first In-N-Out Burger I ever went to as a kid, I saw a whole bunch of jacked up Chevys in the parking lot.
Yeah, but those are all owned by white guys.
I don't know that. The dudes that I saw hanging around them had big processed pompadours and big Chico Jr. boots, man. And they had big jacked up Chevrolets. Hi, RC, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Mr. Hendry, I'm sorry to kind of butt in on this, but I got to go with Mr. Dick on it.
Name's Dickman.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dickman. There's not the concentration of beaner wagons at In-N-Out that you see at other burger stands.
Like what?
You see a very high concentration of the beaner wagon.
What are you guys talking about, a beaner wagon? What do you mean a beaner wagon?
The lowered mini truck. Jesus. I gotta spell it out for you.
Okay, look, man. I don't know what you guys mean by a beaner wagon. I'm telling you right now, I've seen some muscle cars. I've seen some serious rides at In-N-Out Burger. I've seen lowered mini trucks, jacked up Chevys, the big ass end up in the freaking air scoops, blowers, two-tone tinted windows, La Bamba, tell her she's lovely, and Oye Como Va on the back of the window with the freaking chichi balls. That ain't no beaner wagon?
Well, technically...
I see. Well, what are you doing, man? Are you doing a movie or something for Jacques Cousteau? You got the whole thing laid out here?
I'm just telling you what a beaner wagon looks like. And Mr. Dickman's right.
Because when I was, like, working morning radio and I was single, and you get into a groove where you suddenly stop grocery shopping for some reason. I don't know. I just had these whole years like this. So I go home, and I'd wake up at about, you know, I go home and crash after my show, because you're getting up at 3 a.m., but it doesn't mean you're going to bed at a reasonable hour. You may be going to bed at 1 a.m. So it was a two-hour show, or 2 hours of sleep, and then not much of a show, but that's how it went in those days. And then you get off the air, go home, sleep, get up, go to In-N-Out Burger. Come home, and your whole garbage can is full of those In-N-Out boxes. Now I judge the burger by my ability to eat it while I'm driving. I can't eat one of those In-N-Outs while I'm driving. As much as I'd like to, I can't. There's only one burger that you're able to safely eat in the car, as I've often said, and that's the quarter pounder with cheese, maybe the double quarter pounder with cheese. That's the thing that a lot of those companies don't get. Jack in the Box, Taco Bell, In-N-Out, Carl's Jr., Burger King, I don't care who they are. You got to be able to eat that thing in the car, if you'll pardon the expression, while it's moving. And if you can't eat that thing in the car, then there's no point in having any kind of a relationship with it. So I have often said, McDonald's is where it's at, baby. And I was never healthier than when I was eating McDonald's. You could take Subway and you can park it. I could care less about that Gerald, that rat motherless dog. Hi, I'm Gerald, whatever his name is. I lost 800 pounds. You motherless dog. I'm telling you right now, I'm Phil Hendry, and I was never in better shape. I never had more women. I never was more suave and debonair than when I was doing nothing but eating McDonald's morning, noon, and night. I even took many of my dates there. Swing right in, top down, look over at her and go, hurry up and eat, and head right back to my place. I'm joking. Pick her up. She's all dolled up, ready to go to dinner.
I sure am, Phil.
Oh, that's great. Here we are. Well, I'm sorry. So anyway, yeah, so thanks a lot, Jeff, for that In-N-Out Burger thing, man, you maniac. Got me into a whole racial discussion. How come there's no Mexicans working there? There's Mexican-Americans working there. There's African-Americans working there. There's Caucasian-Americans working there. I guess there ain't no, like, Mexican-Mexicans working there. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. All right, 1-800-449-8686 here in a world-famous Phil Hendry show on July the 29th. Our webcast, our second ever webcast, will be on the air, or on the web, I should say. And you can view that by getting a backstage pass for only $6.95 a month. $6.95 a month allows you access to our Marvy website. Now, there's a whole lot there other than the podcasts. Forget the podcasting. I'm going to tell you right now. Right now, things are happening with that podcast. I don't know. But let me tell you this. It's $6.95, and it's always been $6.95. The podcast was extra. You get our 30-day show archives. You can listen to three archive show formats, three different formats to listen to the shows on. You get crystal-clear internet audio quality, both our live stream and our 30-day show archives delivered to your computer in high-quality, crystal-clear audio. Okay, a huge classic audio archive. Daily shows are archived. We also have an audio archive filled with hundreds of fully edited classic show episodes. We're adding stuff all the time. Exclusive photos and video, exclusive internet content, $6.95 a month. Okay, and that's El Cheapo, baby, for the deepest resource of radio comedy ever, the Phil Hendry Show. On the 29th, it'll be our second ever webcast, special MC guest, and other little surprises the 29th. So get your backstage pass and join us. Here is a couple of emails. This one from Jeff. I thought this was interesting. He says, Phil, I just got back from a visit in Iraq. I was doing a site survey for my unit to the place where we will be deploying in 3 weeks. I was at a combat outpost overlooking the Euphrates River with the snipers that pick off insurgents and terrorists crossing at a key bridge. On the wall of their position, they have scrawled that phrase from Team America, America, F, yeah. You know, they got that on the wall. And then he says, I was also in a HMMMWV driving through town when we took fire from four insurgents behind a wall. They were firing RPGs. As my machine gunner and the turret gun fired back, he was yelling, Durka Durka, Mohammed Jihad. That's another line from Team America. So if you guys are listening from Team America, how about that, huh? Those guys are screaming that stuff over in Iraq. Now, where are my residual checks? Just kidding around. You're great, Phil. Thanks for your support. Jeff. Here's one. I know you don't need these, but here it is nonetheless. Bobby and Steve Dooley are just back from France, where she says that they were treated very rudely because of George Bush and the war in Iraq. We went over to cheer on Lance and Cheryl in the Tour de France, and the people were so obnoxious and rude to us at the race because we were American. Turns out they were stripped down to matching red, white, and blue thongs, and they ran out in front of the large crowd of cyclists waving a U.S. flag and causing a minor crash. They were escorted away from the area by French police. You're right. We don't need that, man. I just did a Bobby Dooley hour that bombed. It was fine. It was fine. Here's a guy, Senior Airman Sammy Feynman in Okinawa. And he's asking, Phil, I'm a broadcaster in the United States Air Force. I listen to your show. In any event, is there any chance of you coming to Okinawa and doing one of your shows if we're able to provide the funding? If you have an FTP website, I could log your show, send it back to LA via FTP site. He's giving me all this technical stuff on how we could do our show from Okinawa. And he says that there's all kinds of service people over there. Would love to be able to do that. And if the United States government could pick up the tab, that'd be great. Because as I'm finding out, man, no cats go out and do their shows, at their own expense. You have to pay for it. He says, I thank you for your time, sir, and hope to hear back from you. Senior Airman Sammy Feynman, American FN, American Air, I don't know, AFN?
American Fools?
Yeah, that's it. American Forces Network. That's what it is. American Forces Network. It's a cool little letter there. Here's one from Mike. I was wondering, while watching the webcast, a lot of times you really seem angry at the callers. You were screaming. You called one guy a dumbass. Oh, no, you were screening, you should say. You called one guy a dumbass, and you were pretty harsh to everyone else. I'm not saying selective. That I understand. They're on stage with you. I'm not talking about crankers. They're trying to F up your show, so F them. I just mean regular people who call up. You once described callers as selective listening reactionaries with no lives, a point more than well borne out by your show. So are we basically seeing just utter lack of concern or respect for that type of person, or is it something else? Part of staying in the vibe of the show, maybe? Venting? Just curious, Mike. Well, Mike, your letter actually inspired an article that I wrote for our website. And I respond to Mike's letter. It's called Who Are Those People? How Phil and Harry Screen the Calls. And here was my response to Mike. You might find this interesting, because when I actually articulated it in the letter, I realized it's kind of an amazing number of steps that we go through in screening a call. I basically said, hi, Mike, thanks for your letter. Now, Sprint, you know, the phone company, they log about 15,000 to 20,000 attempts, sometimes more, to get through to our 800 number each hour, each night, five nights a week. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that those 15,000 to 20,000 calls may only represent a few thousand or even a few hundred people. So this is a very small minority making the calls. The reason why I point this out is to educate you to the single biggest factor when dealing with talk show callers. They're a very small fraction of your listener base. In other words, they are not average listeners. They're a minority. We're only able to answer 30 to 40 calls per hour that actually light up the phone lines. Perhaps more when we're getting cranked, meaning we blow through the calls a lot faster. Now, if we're lucky, out of that 30 to 40 calls that we answer, maybe three or four of them can be used on any given hour. Again, this can change depending upon on how incendiary the material is, what's in the news. Now, if you do the math, the system logs roughly 1,410,000 calls a year, of which we're able to answer 28,200. Of those 28,200 that we answer physically per year, we may be able to use 2,820. That's in a good year. Now, standing in the way of our getting those three or four usable calls on the air are a variety of obstacles. One of them is something called the bad phone call. It comes down in four basic forms. Number one, crank callers that are trying to undermine the show by getting on the air and manipulating the content of the show. We can't use those calls. Number two, people who think they're being funny, but they're not. They want to play along, or otherwise they're not serving the purpose of the call that a caller serves on our show. Number three, people who are calling about business unrelated to the hour. They want to have website information. They want to know what time we're on in a certain market. And four, alcoholic, drug-addled, mentally deranged or stupid people who are unable to articulate or say anything really interesting or make a point. Now, in order for us to get a usable phone call on the air, we have to begin our screening process, which only begins after we determine that the individual doesn't fall into those four categories. Then, and only then, do we begin to actually screen the call to find out if they have something even remotely interesting to say. Now, since I'm not answering calls from average listeners, they are a minority of callers, phone etiquette kind of goes out the window a little bit. These people are all used to being blown off the line. They're all used to being told we can't use your call. One thing that they're not used to is being told to get off our line or we'll come to their house and burn it down. Now, the reason why we've employed that on the Phil Hendry Show is because we are trying to make a living here. And we see anybody keeping us from making that living or trying to keep us from making that living, we see them as a hostile entity. People who are to be dealt with very harshly, or as I say in my letter here to Mike, we shove them into a wood chipper until their screams are swallowed by the forest. So essentially, we do our show, we have to be harsh with the callers because we need to get to the good calls quickly. And the people that are trying to crank us, well, they basically get what they're asking for. So that's it, Mike. Thanks for your email. And our email address, phs@philhendryshow.com. We'll be right back.
Takes a man to work at a zoo.
I got the message. Where do you work, Steve?
Either the San Diego Jungle Zoo or the San Diego Zoo Jungle. Something like that. Anyway, Phil, this is an interesting creature.
All right, so this is the animal you're going to have on where?
Well, he'll be in a natural habitat, and we have him in a beautiful... See, here down here at the San Diego Zoo Jungle place, we have animals that are in their natural habitat. We don't believe in putting an animal in a cage in a stark, barren, foreign environment. We want the animal to feel comfortable in his own environs. And that's why we put this little guy, I'll think of the name of him, but we put him, and he seems to like cheese, and he's...
Is it a mouse?
What'd you say?
Is it a mouse?
Why'd you say that?
Big ears and a long tail, eats cheese, lives in, you know...
Let me check with Bill Gunderson. Bill, he says it's a mouse.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay, we'll go with that.
I talked to him last week, and he was telling me about something I don't even remember, but all I know is the guy when I was talking to him, he got his tenses, or not tenses, he got his genders mixed up. In other words, he was talking to me about somebody, it was a woman, and he goes, yeah, he was really great. I said, this woman? Yes. He said, yeah, he was great. I said, who was the woman married to? A man. So he was married to her. Yeah. He was her wife. Anyway, he's supposed to come on. Would you please get this guy squared away, bud, before we talk to him so that the genders are right?